This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Night School, the show that brings you fundamental concepts from the social sciences and the humanities. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman. And every week, alongside Sharat Kutan, we bring discussions about society, the better for your understanding and participation in it. Sharat can't make it today. He is off for the time being, but we are joined here with three awesome guests for a special edition where we discuss an ongoing exhibition right now called Making Space, We Are Where We Aren't, that runs from last Saturday all the way to the coming Monday. That is from the 31st of January to 9th February at Sekeping Sin Chew Kee. Maybe we can introduce ourselves first. To my left here is Johan Zulhaidi, who's involved in translating and reviewing the show.
Yes.
Also with us is Ong Jo Lin, the curator of this show. And next to her is Sharon Chin, one of the artists whose work is being exhibited here. Before we discuss this and reflect together, maybe you can just explain us what this show is about.
Well, this show came about from an open call by the Japan Foundation. And there were no boundaries at all, just anything that we wanted to do as an exhibition or an art project that was in the field of contemporary arts. And having worked at MapKL, a privately owned art space that aimed to democratize access to space, I had just left my job there and I thought I wanted to do something that had to do with, you know, space. And then eventually it became thinking about space as a, by nature, an exclusionary action when we construct space. Mm-hmm. And then with through conversations with my editorial advisor, who is you.
Yeah.
Actually, yes.
Yeah.
You forgot to introduce yourself in relation to this project, Fuad.
Yes.
Yes. And in fact, the subtitle "We Are Where We Aren't" came about through a conversation with you.
Yes.
There
I
you go.
Now, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Now you remember. Okay. So then it became, I mean, again, bouncing off with you, and slowly it was a very fluid, an organic process. First, there were two artists, then four, then six, then eight, and the curatorial approach, one very important thing that I have to point out was that I tried very hard not to instrumentalize the artworks, meaning I did not come up with a very rigid theme and then sort of instrumentalize works to fit it or to sort of illustrate a point that I was trying to make. Mm-hmm. It was more of, you know, just looking at people who, through their practice as artists, dealt with navigating city spaces and somehow, of course, when you think about city spaces, it's very natural to think of trying to find a finer grain understanding of private and public. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything and how it overlaps and crosses. And then so it became Making Space, We Are Where We Aren't, is an exhibition that reflects on the increasingly privatized urban condition we're in. And it's a congregation of artworks that sort of asks the audience to have a, you know, bit of a finer grain understanding of private and public.
Awesome. Sharon, how did you end up participating in this project?
Well, I'm kind of just a hanger-on. So I made some pretty pictures and for ZDEXU's stories. So it's a collection of short microfiction, so literally about 4 to 5 paragraphs, and they're all about fictional animals. I made some lino prints for them, and we pasted up these stories and the illustrations at bus stops around the Pudu area.
Mm-hmm. Were there particular reasons why you felt the need to bring out those illustrations outside of the exhibition space?
Yeah, I think it... I've been concerned about, you know, bringing art out of galleries for a really long time now, probably ever since I started making art. But it was only in the last like 2-3 years or so where I felt that actually had a strong feeling that the gallery was art where art went to die. Mm-hmm. So I think it felt important in an exhibition about public and private space to actually try some different outcomes. Mm-hmm. And see what it would be like to put art where people aren't used to seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, that applies for this particular show because the location is not a typical gallery.
It's not. It's a guest house.
It's a guest house. And it's not even a normal guest house.
Right? Because it's an Eunsaksan guest house.
Yeah, it's designed.
It's never normal.
It's designed in kind of unconventional ways. What was the thought process that led you to choose that location?
I had decided on the venue before I even selected the artist, actually. And of course, it's because I had a conversation with another artist and the idea was planted in my head. But of course, mainly it's because the space is very challenging. And if we're going to do a show about how the city is challenging, then I wanted to set the art sort of true to that setting, where I left the Seksan's private art collection intact on the walls of that space. I've also left a lot of the furniture as it is, and most of the artists, of course, responded to it or just worked around it. Some people might say that this is confusing, you know, is this painting part of the show or not? And even the map that I've drawn, the layout that I've drawn out in the exhibition guide sort of just vaguely points out to where the artwork is. And that is the idea, that we should be a bit more conscious of our surroundings. And in the architecture and design of the space as well, the railings, a lot of low railings, some low clearances, and uneven lighting, uneven floors. So, but having inhabited that space in the 2 weeks preparing for the exhibition, I adapted very quickly. You know, it just takes a bit of being conscious of your surroundings. And so the entire setup was sort of done that way.
So in a way, it's meant to unsettle us, the very fact that it's done in a not conventional place.
I felt that it would be more true to the subject of the exhibition and also the spirit of quite a few of the artworks. So not just to what I thought, but I think the spirit of some of the artworks as well. If, like, you know, Sharon and Zidek's works, they are on bus stops. And bus stops are, of course, full of billboard advertising and a lot of other massage advertising. So you've got to look around and to find stuff. And it's also, I suppose, well, Sharon said it's art galleries is where art goes to die. Well, I may not feel that strongly about it, but I do think art can be outside of art. And art can exist in the everyday. You know, I think there's this text by Michel Desroteaux, The Practice of Everyday Life. So again, looking beyond dichotomies of producers and consumers, looking at how, you know, everyday folk, non-artists, are also reappropriating a lot of mass culture and making it their own.
I guess I've sort of set myself up as the extremist in a competition.
I didn't mean that way.
But no. But it's funny too how like for me and Zidek, even this exhibition at Sekeping Sinchuki, which isn't a gallery space, wasn't enough. So like you know, we had to we wanted to bring it out of even that space. So it's
actually
it's
the,
funny.
The project had existed before this exhibition came about. I mean, you guys did Hell Money, so you already brought it out into the city. So I was actually bringing it in to a certain space. Yeah, they were already out there being radical.
Johan, you're a writer, regular commentator on the art scene in Malaysia. Why is this question of space so significant now?
Well, as for me, I studied architecture before this. And I think most of the works that I did dealt with space itself. And I guess the question of the exhibition is quite interesting. Okay, there's one case, let's just say that the works of Daniel Chong's and Engku Iman.
Can you describe them a bit for those who
are familiar? Well, Daniel Chong's works was given the limits of my imagination. So it portrays the limits of one's own thinking on each particular subject. And the same goes with Engku Iman's work. It represents the struggle of being a Malay woman. And it's quite interesting for me because the site that have been chosen by Jolene was at the...
And the artists.
And the artists was at the bedroom, was at the place where they sleep, the private space. And I guess it is in accordance with the product of the thinking itself, where I think you can think a lot in your private space where you are not bound by public, where you are supposed to, you know, take care of your vulgar mind or something.
Yeah, and another friend, Mayang, commented that Engku Yiman's work, which is a series, a three-part self-portrait, sort of spoke to her when the K-pop incident broke out. And she said it's kind of like private thoughts being played out in public, in action. And so the work sort of touches on that.
But it seems to me, especially based on your account of the problems with the notion of a gallery space itself, the idea that art has to go out there, that part of the task here is to problematize the notion of the private too, right? Yeah. In the sense that we cannot just take it for granted as this shelter or this safe haven.
Or the easiest way to get freedom, right?
Or to be oneself. Yeah, I mean, it's sad that, you know, much of what we take of who we are has to be private, right? It's, in a way, it's a kind of self-enclosure. How do these works challenge that or speak to that in any way?
Yeah, I think there's the idea of privately owned, which is a question about property and capitalism, but then the notion of privacy. Mm. So private thoughts, the private self. I don't necessarily think these two ideas are one and the same. I think it's quite important to define each one. Yeah.
And but we kind of do conflate them, and part of the show was also trying to say that when you drive a car, you're kind of privatizing a space around you. You do have a freedom to set the temperature, to set your music, choose your schedules, as opposed to if you're taking a public transport options, or if you're cycling and you're sort of more open to the elements and all that. And in the city, if it's when you're not conscious of your surroundings, and like you would, you know, for example, if you drive a car and you use the main streets, there's just so much of the city that you miss out. And if you just sort of move out of your comfort zone a bit, and then your view just instantly changes. And I was glad to hear that many people, it was for many, it was their first time on Jalan Sinchuki, and immediately it was a different kind of surrounding. And in terms of how the works challenges this whole notion of privatizing space as a means to freedom, and also not conflating ideas of like privacy and, you know, private ownership. With this exhibition, you can now pee in public and with very little cover through Contact's work. So there are a bunch of architects and designers. They operate as a collective. They're constantly very process based. They challenge organization structure. So they try to work in a very flat rhizomatic organization structure as a collective. And for this project, 20 over people were involved taking care of edible plants. The idea was to close the nitrogen loop in human waste and human consumption, urine to fertilizing edible plants to consuming, eating edible plants. And there's actually a public urinal at the back lane of Sinchuki. And the beautiful thing isn't the object on display, but during the opening night when they changed the social architecture and people's perception of this place called the back lane. I may be overstating it, but I felt that they reclaimed the back lane as a public space, at least for that one night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And no neighbors were killed in the process, so quite happy about that.
It's wonderful. It's interesting stuff. You are listening to me, Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, alongside Johan Zulhaidi, Ong Jo Lin, and Sharon Chin. This is Night School on BFM. We'll be back to discuss more of making space. You're listening to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you are listening to Night School. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat. Alongside me, Johan Zulhaidi, Sharon Chin, and Ong Jo Lin. They are a part of Making Space. We Are Where We Aren't, which is this exhibition that challenges our taken-for-granted notions of space. And that is happening throughout this week until this coming Monday, which is the last day, at Sekping Sinchuki. We're just going over some of the general themes that of this exhibition, touching on a few of the artworks that are being featured. And as we were discussing, one of the things that came to mind was what exactly art brings into the discussion. Because a lot of the stuff we talk about are basically ideas. Yeah. A lot of them are expressed largely, you know, if you think about theory, it's through essay form. People have conveyed the same ideas through, for example, architecture, right? The actual construction of spaces. But what this brings is a different dimension. You are taking artworks, you're taking objects of everyday life and representing it and reportraying it in a certain way. So what does that add to the discussion that, say, essays can't, that architecture can't, or photography itself can't? Like, what does the practice of art add?
I think, for example, the works of Saiful, Razman and Kojak, mm-hmm. In the Name of Comfort, I think it's quite interesting because it forces us to adapt to the uncomfortable of the chair itself. But it was it was made that way. And I guess, if I'm not mistaken, someone said about that work, it also represents the spaces that have been presented by us and we have to adapt to it. So during the opening, we can see a lot of people are trying to be comfortable sitting on that chair. So it's more or less a physical intervention. And that work was part of a opening during that opening show. Like, I mean, yeah. You can actually see that it can be done like that.
Essentially, what that adds is the very experience of discomfort in a particular space.
Yeah, that for you to have to adapt.
That we can't just think or read. One must really feel and be in that moment to use those particular objects that have been shaped for that particular purpose. Interesting.
Yeah, I guess you're right, Johan. It's I think art brings a sort of very visceral and, you know, physical experience along with intellectual, you know, stimulation, ideas and concepts. But I also think it's about the space of the imagination. For example, like, there's this cliche, right, that, you know, art is the mirror of society. But I don't know, there are things in me, there are images in me for which there are no mirror in the real world. So that's why I make them. And that's where I feel, you know, these stories came from and where the illustrations, the images from them came from. And to put that out there in the physical world, I think, you know, that's something that art can do that other things may not be able to do.
Does it base more on just abstract spaces, which is the same goes as music and art? Does it only base on thinking itself, using the imagination, using the power of the mind? Or because I think in the Name of Comfort, the product itself is... It actually based on the thinking itself, but the product is live and you have to actually sit on it, you have to be comfortable upon it, or else the rest of the works that based on aesthetic values alone is...
Really?
Yeah?
No, I agree. I think it's quite architectural, that work, the
Name of Comfort?
In the Name of Comfort, yeah. It sort of forces you to confront it in that architectural way, right? How do you actually use... these constructions to sit on, you know, redefining sitting even.
And would that apply to the Petalizer as well?
Petalizer is something else, I think. Petalizer is something that you have to do in private, but you do it in public instead.
It's also testing people's attitudes. So it's an experiment. And I think, Sharon, you were saying that it's quite interesting that quite a few of the works in this exhibition are sort of in the middle of a process. Like, it's not complete yet, you know? And so Petalizer is an ongoing experiment. And even right now, they're still collecting information. It has to do with not just the efficacy of urine as a fertilizer and, you know, what ratio dilution with water should you use, which type of plants work, you know, does it work better with? But it's also attitude of the 20 young urbanites that were involved and the kind of communication process, that, you know, and also the public. Like, now it's the whole installation is out on a back lane and anyone can use it or damage it or take it away if they don't like it. And the artists do not maintain it. So when the water runs out, there's an instruction manual for whoever who passes by to fill up this water, empty that tank and water the plants. And we'll see
how
well
are the
works.
Plants doing? That's what I'm wondering.
Kangkong's doing better today. It kind of wilted in yesterday's afternoon sun. The lettuce is still not promising.
In case you just joined us, we are discussing Making Space, We Are Where We Aren't, an exhibition that challenges your conceptions of space. And the two things we're talking about is Saiful Razman's work, In Name of Comfort, where he I guess, take some liberties, some chairs mm-hmm. for you to sit on. And of course, Petalizer, as Johan described, is this invitation to pee in public through this contraption that also tries to use your pee to fertilize plants.
And on opening night, I may be jumping a little far here, but there was also relational aesthetics at play, you know, changing the relationship that night, you know, and with amongst people in that space, and also the use of the back lane that night. And I think one work that we haven't touched on that you actually quite like, this Oguilala's video. Yeah, why don't you walk us through that one?
It's her representation of what she takes to be this phenomenon we all can relate to, but we all somehow don't take seriously, and that is the fact that most of our dwellings are made by migrant workers, but we do not recognize their work in when we acquire a certain building or certain house,
and we don't acknowledge that their presence was there.
We don't acknowledge their presence was there. In fact, the value has
we
largely
think we
to
were
do
the first ones, but no.
Yeah. In fact, the value is largely to do with how much we can forget the fact that it's done by, you know, the hands of actual human beings. Mm. So that I find very compelling.
You know how now the trend is we kind of value things that are handmade and artisanal. That house was handmade.
Yes.
The bricks were laid by hand. As much as there's a lot of machinery involved in our, you know, making our built environment, but we don't see that. And her video was cut in a way where there's a lot of times you only see a black screen and text, and you can hear Mustafa's voice in very good speaking in perfect Bahasa Malaysia, because she feels that we see them. I mean, we see them all around the city, but we don't hear them. We don't listen to them. We don't know what their stories are, you know.
What I wonder, you know, as you're discussing the sought-after impact of these works, is the extent to which the artists were working as a community. Was that there, or were they largely working as individuals in their little sections?
I think we largely worked on our own, but there was a cohesiveness to things, or rather, lots of differing approaches, I think, that somehow seemed to cohere. For example, like there's this idea of utility in the artworks, or maximizing utility in Petalizer, where, you know, even bodily waste should be used to fertilize the plants. And then there's a work, you know, mine and ZDEC's work, which is largely useless. I mean, it's not going to feed the homeless in that way.
But it's useful. Yeah. I mean, there's a utility to it in a sense that it's on bus stops and you're waiting, and then you're bombarded by stupid ads that you didn't even ask to see. And then someone presents to you a fiction, which of course no one asks. I mean, you know, they didn't ask the permission of whoever's at the bus stop or the city. But it's a little fiction. It's a little work of art.
How do we measure utility in art, Johan? Because I'm thinking like Daniel Chong's work. I mean, I find it very interesting, but one cannot really pin any value utility in the way that perhaps you can with on the Petalizer, because you're actually growing kangkong, right?
Yeah. So, I think Daniel Chong's and Nkuiman's is purely emphasizing on just the thinking space, the abstract spaces, and, you know, telling people that this is what happened and how what we think and what we can produce.
It's abstract space.
Yeah.
Space. That's where everything starts, right? Because we envision dimensions, we quantify distances and all these things. I mean, those are abstract concepts that we try to make manifest. And when you think of the carpet that Uncle Iman
fashioned out of wax strips.
And of course,
with
the fact
hairs
that,
stuck on it.
You rightly say that these are abstract works, but they are nonetheless grounded in a kind of space, and there's that connection there that I find very interesting. Is that, can that be considered space? Can our conceptions of who we are, even in abstraction, be spatial?
Well, I think Lee Kuang's work kind of touches nicely on what you sort of talked about there, where it's a sound recording of the nearby Pudu LRT station, and that one is sort of physical in the sense that the idea that the sound of a passing train artificially inserted in a space doesn't seem so artificial in our urban landscape. And it's to be read in accompaniment with an essay also titled No Sound is Private, where he's basically saying that the moment your thought is uttered out or written or expressed in any way, it is no longer private. It is somehow public. and that is already sort of this idea of what is abstract space and what is physical space.
And I do think it all begins in thought. Okay, so like for example, when I walk in a mall, I can feel my mental process shift, sort of shut down. Do you guys feel that?
Mm.
A bit zombie.
Sometimes I get excited when they're pretty stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And
I think that's what happens when it shuts down. Yeah.
But you're sort of in this state of like stimulation, semi-stimulation of the, you know, flashing lights and you know, objects of desire. And at the same time, like how you think about a space can change it completely. So I think that's where sort of art has impact on the collective imagination. I mean, it can sort of shift a whole population of people to dream or think in a certain way, which is what, you know, people have been calling the internet, right?
Mm.
It's like the collective dream of humanity.
Collective mm-hmm. consciousness.
Yeah, and that's what memes are. You know, it's like the whole internet dreaming the same thing for one moment in time. So yeah, I think it's powerful stuff, you know. Yeah.
But it is also a question about whether or not the abstract spaces, our capabilities to think, can actually manipulate the existing space. As you say that you go to a mall, whether or not your mind can be strong enough to do something that is not appropriate over there.
Mm.
But it can. Mm-hmm. I think it's. I think the example of in the shower where you should just take a shower, but instead you just linger around and sing, pretend like there's a karaoke competition or dance or something like
now
that.
Now I know what you do.
Yeah.
But that's the duality of space he's talking about. You know, it's at the same time the structures that shape our actions, and also our actions are shaping our spaces.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. Is this a chicken and egg situation, or who's stronger, the space itself or us?
I think resistance does begin in thought.
Yeah.
I do believe that.
Well, it's a question of the extent to which we are autonomous with the spaces we have.
Okay.
You know, are we bound by them, right?
Yeah.
In the way that, say, public housing, right, for example, is designed largely to ensure that life for the underclass is regimented a certain way, right? You cannot really, the lack of economic power means you're bound to certain structures that the government sets for you, so on and so forth. In that case, your relationship to space is determined by class. So, and because we have this sort of autonomous abstract space in our imaginations, right? There are imaginations that are a reflection of our alienation
you
know, when we succumb to certain notions of body images, certain notions of class pressures, and we entertain those thoughts. There's also imaginations that liberate.
Yeah.
So the task is to tell at which point we slide into kind of buying in to what everybody's trying to sell, and to what extent we walk into the mall and, like you say, we try to do something different, you know.
And coming back to then what you said and how art can influence our collective political imagination is because more and more people, whether they're artists or just people who have certain bursts of creativity, are bringing their art out there and making small transformative actions or changes through these art. You know, examples like Sasaran Fishing Village International Art Festival, like Padang Jawa Street Art Festival, and what else? Maybe even Kebun. Kebun Kaki Bukit. I mean, it's a farm, but there's also this other interesting thing where a lot of creative people are putting their energy into growing stuff, and I think Michael Tosic is trying to study that. And yeah, all these little actions out into spaces where, I don't know, things are not so ideal, where there's room for creative resistance.
What's the best way to engage with this work? Say if somebody's coming.
Those who wants to visit, I think they should compare the works and the site that has been provided.
What do you mean by that?
In the name of comfort,
uh-huh.
using the public, using the front space,
uh-huh.
two works, which is Daniel Chong's and Kui Man, the on the bedroom, the bedroom.
Yeah, in the same way that I don't think Daniel Chong's would work necessarily if it's the first thing you see.
Yeah.
And in the way that Razman, the chairs work only because it captures you immediately and it's where everything else is intersecting. Yeah,
I agree. And to bring it even further, I think it should be seen in the context of the area that it's in. So really, I mean, it's a really good opportunity for people to take their time to walk around the streets a little bit and just see the differences between the buildings on that street, for example. You know, the some buildings are a little older. I mean, Sir Kipping Sinchuki and the bar downstairs, Balai, obviously have their own certain kind of aesthetic. And it's interesting to think or wonder about where these aesthetics come from, and then to see the shiny new buildings surrounding your that horizon line, and just to feel how fragile some of the spaces are, I think. And also, a thing that made a huge impression on me when we were putting up the works at about 4 a.m. in the morning, is to walk the streets of KL late at night and to see so many people sleeping on the streets. They're men, women, old, young, so many more than I can ever remember. I can't forget it. Mm-hmm. I just can't. And yeah, it's really made a huge impression on me.
Okwilala's work is a TV, and behind the TV is a window, and through the window you can see the next door neighbor of Sir Kipping Sinchuki, and it's inhabited by how do I say this? Lower income, clearly people who don't make too much money, and it's run as a recycling collection center. And I'm right next door there for 2 weeks, and I like their cats, but I've made no effort to talk to them. I mean, I tell myself I have, and that, you know, they don't look like they want to talk, but it sounds pretty convenient. I even sort of use them in Okwilala's work. You know, it was a conscious choice to display that work there, of a video of starring a worker from Bangladesh, and the site that where they were, the video was shot, looks very much like the house right next door. Yeah,
that's invite it. Them over.
We did little flyers, but okay, yeah. Okay, I will move out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, it's... I think that's what... That's definitely what space is about, I think. Like, actually interacting with your neighbours. That's what privatised space takes away from us. Because you don't... Everything's bought and sold. So, you know, it's clean, it's easy, in and out, bam. But when the conditions change,
yeah,
that's when you really have to interact, yeah, with the people who are living beside you. And I also think it's great that, Julian, you acknowledged your efforts or
lack of.
Or lack of. I think that's refreshing.
Okay.
I think that's really great.
All right, wonderful. So you've been listening to me, Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, along with Sharon Chin, Ong Jo Lin, and Johan Zul Haidi. And we've been discussing an ongoing exhibition called Making Space. We Are Where We Aren't. It's on until this coming Monday. And it is
located... a very interesting artist sharing this Sunday. It's artist sharing because the artists aren't going to just talk to you, except Saiful Razman and Kojak, but they're very handsome. Let them talk to you. I actually don't know what the talented and beautiful Sharon Chin is doing yet, or Zidek, but Daniel Chong will have a little workshop. He'll teach you how to make your own four-quadrant matrix and tackle rationality
wow,
on a tissue paper. And... Contact's 20 over members will share their snippets of their experiences, and then Contact will sort of sum it up. There's a little something, a summary to it all that I don't even know about. So
wonderful.
We'll see. And
wonderful.
Then Engku Iman is trying to track down the person who wrote those love letters to her like many, many years ago.
He should be.
I hope this is not threatening the efforts.
I feel like he should be credited.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the major contributions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she's going to pose a difficult question to everyone in the audience. That's the other section. And Jeff will...
Listeners, that's my personal favourite part of the exhibition, by the way. Uncle Iman's bit.
So. Uh-huh. Okay. Jeff will do a little show and tell, because so much part of his work is the experimentation in the process of developing like a photographic, through photographic print methods, but onto zinc. So imagine like film photography, but instead of developing it in a dark room on a piece of photo paper, you have to coat the zinc, make it into like a photo paper, and then, you know, print it. So a little show and tell there.
Oh, wonderful. Mm. So that's on Sunday?
Yes, at 3 p.m.
At 3 p.m. Mm. And all of this is happening at Sir Kipping Sinchuki, which, as you said, is right behind the Swiss Garden Hotel.
Or right behind VCR to all you right hipsters like me.
Yes. All right, well, thank you, everybody. Thank you for coming and sharing.
Thank you.
This has been Night School. You're listening to BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.